wasting time. Time is precious, right? So if you feel something that, I think this is going to be sort of a waste of time and money. Okay, that's enough. And it probably is. If you feel like that, it probably is. So go on, think of a new idea. As you learn from your mistakes, you become more, I don't say cynical, but you become more astute to that. Oh, this ain't going to work. That is, we need to go here or whatever. So there's all these things that you just learn along the way that makes you more, I should say, have this degree in common sense that you know what to do and know what not to do.
You're listening to the Quest for Questions podcast, live from wherever Conrad's yerba mate addiction takes us to. In this show, we ask not-so-common questions to not-so-common humans. In search of not-so-common answers, you're here as a rebel, scratching your head, trying to navigate the fast-changing world of fake news, charlatans, and all-around bullshit. Together, each week, we go down the rabbit hole of truth, exploring the lives of all kinds of clear-thinking specialists to tease out their whys, their hows, and their piece of truth. Enjoy the ride.
So welcome to the Quest for Questions podcast. Today's guest is someone who went from living an ordinary life in a small town in England to becoming an adventurer, multiple book author, and an enrichment speaker. In the meantime, he also co-founded a software development business, which he sold after 15 years to fund his adventures all around the world. Just like me, he picked up the so-called travel bug early in his life, and then slowly developed it over his extensive travels for business for over 30 years. To this day, he visits over 90 countries, which is pretty damn impressive. One of my favorite quotes I got from him, and one we discuss in the interview itself, is the best degree you can have in life is the degree on common sense. I wholeheartedly agree with that. So here are the three main questions me and Malcolm are exploring today. So why the most important degree in life is the degree on common sense, and how do you earn that degree? Second, why companies' biggest assets are its employees, and how do you spot and hire the A players, the one who are gonna be your biggest asset? And finally, how do you prepare for a business meeting in a foreign country or with a business from abroad? So hey, this is Conrad, yerba mate addict, and here is a conversation with a lifelong learner who keeps on discovering how the rest of the world works, the one and only Malcolm Teasdale. Enjoy! So welcome to the Quest for Questions podcast, Malcolm. I'm super excited to talk to you because we shared a lot of kind of passions and things in common, I think. Mostly the obvious ones is travel and business. But I think the way you also traveled, you know, how you went through life, some thoughts you have about different countries, you know, just in a just general like way you talk about things. From the moment I kind of stumbled upon you, I knew that we will have a lot of things in common and a lot of things to chat about and discuss different ideas. So I know, you know, that you basically have done almost everything, obviously not, but you traveled to like 90 plus countries. You started a business, you sold it, you lived in different places. So you've done a lot of, like many people would say, like cool, interesting, amazing things. But what I'm curious about, and it's always interesting to kind of figure out, is like what moment or like what series of events like led you to kind of see the opportunities there were and go that kind of uncommon direction? Because I know you are from like England, from like typical family, and you said that, you know, when you were younger, you were kind of just going the normal route, like school and, you know, just slowly transitioning into, I'm going to have a job and things like that. So like, either was there a specific moment that turned your head around, like, oh, this is what I can do, there are all these things possible, like, or was there like some series of events or different moments in your life? And if so, could you just kind of walk us through that? Because I'm super interested in like, how did it happen for you, you know?
You like became a travel addict, you mean?
Um, No, more like in general that you went this different path where it's like you didn't get a job, you didn't stay in England, you traveled, yeah, you founded right, a company, like you saw that there's like opportunities in the world and there's many things you can do and you went for it. So you know, I think people have different like realizations and different people things make them go for that route. So I'm curious, like, what was it for you? That makes sense.
Yeah, because I grew up in a city called Coventry, which is famous for the car industry. And it normal thing was, well, we go to school, grow up, have families and all that, which is just fine. I was enjoying it at school and you get a job and all that. But this started, I was fortunate. My parents used to take myself and my sister to places in Europe for vacation, which was quite nice, you know, where the sun shines, which it doesn't in England too much. And so I think one year my parents came up to me and said, hey, Malcolm, your dad and I are going to Asia for a couple of weeks. I was about 18 at the time. I was still living at home. And they said to me, can we leave you here alone for a couple of weeks? Take care of the cat in the house. I said, well, absolutely. You know, it sounded like a great idea. Go do it. So they went away, came back. The cat was still alive. The house hadn't burned down to the ground. And they told me about their trip to Asia. And I thought, that's intriguing. But growing up in England, the normal thing to do, you do with your buddies, is you take off to Spain or Portugal or the beaches in the Mediterranean. And that's where you go. You sort of go clubbing at night and sleep on the beach during the day. And that's sort of a normal thing to do. And it's a lot of fun, but it does wear on you. So when I reached sort of my early 20s, I decided, you know, I got to do something different rather than go to Spain. So I thought, I want to go to Asia. And so I started asking my friends, hey, do you want to go with me to Asia? And the excuses came up. I said, well, I'm sort of engaged now. I'm going to get married. I got to save my money. And that's one excuse. And one thought, what? You want to go all the way over there? So far away. Why would you want to do that? We can just go here. So I'll end up going to Asia by myself for 3 weeks to Thailand, Singapore, and Hong Kong. And at the time of my life, I remember that and it stuck with me. And just a few years later, I had an opportunity. I got offered a job in Ottawa, Canada. And I took it because I thought working overseas is a good idea. They didn't tell me about the weather. I landed in January the 4th, 1982, and the snow didn't go away till May. Shock to the system. Anyway,
Canada.
That was a good experience, but I joined another company there, then transferred me back to Britain. I was there a year, got itchy feet again, because I got this travel bug now. So the company I was with transferred me to Boca Raton, Florida, which is sort of South Florida. And but I knew at that time when I was going to transfer to the United States, I would have to be traveling. I was in the technology field. And so the job I had to do was like from a technical nature was to travel, fix stuff basically around the nation. I thought, well, this is a great chance to see the United States. And that's exactly what happened. Right. And I was enjoying it. It was fabulous. But then later on, as I grew older, I thought, time to figure out doing stuff by myself. And myself and a buddy of mine who worked for the same company, we had an idea to develop a product that was a little bit better than what our company was developing at the time. So we went off and started our own business. And then we capitalized on the North American market a little bit, but it was time to venture out into the international markets. And then I had to travel internationally. So I was fortunate in the fact that I got to see the US and Canada. But then I was able to start traveling overseas to sell our products or find companies that would sell our product. And that's when it all happened, basically. I was on the road. So it was self-inflicted, of course, A, because I wanted to do it, and B, because I sort of had to do it to make the business successful. And that's what happened. And eventually we got acquired in 2013. And then, but, you know, even though I traveled a bazillion years, you know, a lot of months of the year on the road, even when I sort of retired early, if that's the word, what I wanted to do after that was travel more because I had the bug. So I started going to these off beaten track places, and the story continues basically. That's where I'm today. you know, still trying to do it as much as I can, but while I can, by the way, because there will come that day, as you know.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mr. Teasdale, you just can't travel anymore. You're going to have to stay at home or go in a nursing home, or you've lost your mind. We're putting you in a home. Yeah, well, who knows? But anyway, that's where it sits today. So that's the long story short. And I picked up a travel bug early in my life, and then it stuck with me. And that's pretty much it.
So I guess the obvious question, but the one that really fascinates me, because you know, I think for each person it's different. Is the like kind of what was the travel bug for you? Like what was it that hooked you at the beginning, and then what kept you kind of coming back to it, you know, all over the years? Because I think, you know, at first you travel, you know, you start the initial itch comes from different things. In your case, was like because your parents, but then I think once you try it, and then you analyze it, at least for me, you figure out like what was the real reason that you like it so much, and what really, you know, takes you there. And I think for every person it's different. I mean, some people have it similar, but I'm curious, like have you figured out like what was it for you, like the travel bug, what was it about, and what you know, what has kept it like alive so all these years?
Good question. It was about, for me, education.
Mm.
Learning of foreign cultures. So because I went to Asia at an early age, it was a different culture altogether. But something stuck with me there. I loved it. Then the more I traveled overseas and learned about foreign cultures, I thought, this is great. It's a great learning experience. It was something new for me to learn, so to speak. And I was able to learn about it and be able to handle business deals a lot better. And I still have that today. Actually, when I'm on cruise ships, I lecture about it as well. So the learning of foreign cultures was important to me. And even if it's trekking in the middle of nowhere, you meet the villagers somewhere in a remote mountain village, it's really cool to learn how they live from day to day. Mm. Right? So it's an ongoing process. So the reason I do it today is, obviously I go back to similar places I went to before, but it's a continual learning experience for me. And that's why I do it. And that was the catalyst for me to keep traveling, I guess.
But is it more about the people, or more about like the I think it's more about the people, the way I understand it, not about like the buildings.
It's about the people but the land as well. You know, I went a couple of years ago. I decided to go camping in the wilderness of Mongolia. Now, who on earth does that, right? So I stayed in Ulaanbaatar for a couple of days, and I booked with a tour company. It's difficult to do yourself. We just went into the wilderness somewhere and stayed in one of the jurs, or yurts we call them, and I camped there. And it was fantastic, because then I spent the time with the nomads out there, and it was just so interesting to see why these people live. And I just remember asking a family of nomads out there, there was the father, mother, and their young son, all right, and they're from them. I said, why don't you guys just go live in Ulaanbaatar? It's a good city. There's a traffic problem, but go on. And they basically said in the roundabout way, not a chance in hell we would do that. Because that's the way they were brought up. They experienced it, but that's the way they live their life, and they're quite happy with it. If you look at country Bhutan, hasn't sort of moved forward in centuries. They're doing it at their own rate, but people happy there. They do not want the life of other countries like we used to, you know, like in the developed world. They're happy the way they live. And it's great to go there and experience the way they live. And you have just this is pretty good. The people are happy. That nature is here. It's beautiful. And, you know, it's great to experience it. Even if it's just a small period of time, it's a good thing to do.
Mm.
And those experiences stay with you, right? Because you remember it, you know. I live on a beach, but I could just go on the beach in tourist season. It's a bit iffy, but you know, you go to the beach, sun yourself on the beach. Yeah, I had a good day at the beach today, but you know, I prefer doing some obscure stuff. And that, because those are things that really stay with you. You'll remember it in the future. So anyway, it's about, as you say, what keeps me going is probably the culture, as far as the people are concerned, and also the landscape, if you wish, but nature, or just going to a foreign land, which is different from where I live.
Mm. Yeah, it's really interesting sometimes how it's like, you actually nailed the head that, for me, it's kind of the same, that sometimes seeing how other people live and how they are like happy, even though it doesn't really make sense, because the way we are brought up in this like Western culture, like it's so totally off, like, oh, they don't have all this like cool, you know, technology. It seems like they're not like comfortable all the time. They, you know, it's like they're living like far away. It doesn't really make sense to us how these people could love it. But, you know, there's a lot of places where people live totally different way, and it seems like they're happier. Like
people, a lot of people like that. Because I live in the States, a lot of people around where I live, they don't understand it, or they probably might not care about how the rest of the world lives. I do. So when sometimes I talk about it, what it's like elsewhere, they're quite surprised. And because they will always ask, well, why on earth would you want to go there? You know. But yeah, it's a cool thing to actually learn how these people live. Here's another city that's that I had experience with, Kathmandu. It's one of the most chaotic places. I don't know if you've been
Nepal, yeah.
And it's one of the most chaotic cities you'd ever go to in your life. It's congested with cars and people and bikes. And people go about their business day to day. It's think, wow. And even though the police are trying to direct traffic there, and they get confused and bent out of shape, it's unbelievable. Then you go off into the mountains and these mountain villages away from it all. And there's all these small communities, close-knit communities, and all the people are sort of happy. They just tick along in their own way, and they're more than happy staying up there out of the way. Mm. You know, totally different way of life, same country, but you know, that's what they want. I suppose here it's the same thing. People live in the countryside or whatever, people live in the city, but this is more of an extreme way, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's a good learning experience anyway.
So like before we hit record, I mentioned that for me, the place that really, you know, I like the way of life is South America, and especially Argentina. And for you, it seems like from your stories and the, you know, the most places that you like, the places you visited most often and you talk about, it's Asia, especially Southeast Asia. So like what about this area of the world, like, you know, got you so interested? And you still love about it is like what about the culture, or about like the way of living, or about the traditions? I don't know what is it, but like what, why Asia, why Southeast Asia, why this?
Well, it's a good question again, and it is the reason, because I've traveled there a couple of times before, had a really good time. But when I mentioned to you before, we started a business in 1998. It was a technology business where we sold. We developed software, then sold it for what they call call centers. But anyway, we tried to expand globally. But Asia is on an unfriendly time zone. It's, I mean, it's like 12 hours of drift, basically. It's very difficult to do business. And Asian culture is that we're not going to do business over the phone with you. We have a 12-hour time zone difference. You know, we don't know what you're like. So I moved there. I moved to Singapore in 2007 and 2008. Singapore is unbelievably great place to live, actually, perfectly safe, extremely high standard of living, and it's cool, very sort of ethnic, but everyone gets along just fine. I moved there, and then that was my headquarters, because I could, with a hop, skip, and a jump, go to these different countries and visit them in a short time frame, and visit people face-to-face. Most everyone speaks English, by the way, so that wasn't a problem. Apart from China, is probably a language issue, but pretty much everywhere I went, they spoke the language. I speak basically one language, English. You know, I speak American as well, if you want to class that as a language. But anyway, it's actually it was easy for me to do business, and that was well worth it. So staying there for quite some time, and then was able to travel a little bit more. And because there was business to be had, so why not? Yeah, great thing. So I mentioned it one day. I just came home And I said to the wife, hey, dear, do you want to move to Singapore for a while? And she said, I'm your girl. So I got that support. So I got that out of the way. And,
nice.
We just rented a place over there, and it was just brilliant, brilliant time.
So it was mostly kind of at first, and it stayed that it was mostly just kind of like business, and then just the location, and then you figured out that like Singapore, for example, is very like it's great to live there. But then you went on to like explore all of the countries around that, and I think you came back a lot to them instead of like exploring, for example, I don't know, Africa or Middle East. So is there like some further thing that you know you like irks you to the Asian countries compared to like some other places in the world?
Yeah, I've been to South Africa, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. Went to a conference down there. That was cool, also, but. And then the Middle East. But because there was more of a market for us at the time for the technology we were making, Asia was solidly best suited for it. So it made sense to move there. And we were doing quite well in Europe because we had distributors in Europe. But I made a few trips to Europe. And but typically, if I had to go somewhere for a meeting, then I looked at the route there, the route back. Should I stay a few extra days, or where else can I go to after or before? So you add stuff on or add stuff to the end, and then it was great. So it wasn't just a business trip there and back. You can do stuff before and after. That was my idea. Make the most of it while you can. You know?
Your life motto. Yeah. So now, like, we were talking about some like now stories and kind of the reasons why, but because I also wanted to make it very like hands-on for people, like some, you know, takeaways, advice, stuff like that. What I'm really curious about, and this is, I think, something you have a really, you will have a great take on, is like, you mentioned that you like to figure out how the cultures work or countries work and how people within it. And then you also, I think, said that when you would do the public speaking in like on the cruise ships, you would before prepare something, you know, like figure out something, some interesting stuff and what you can tell about the new country city that you would kind of go to so you can tell the people. So I guess the question is like, what is usually like your process for figuring that out? Like what are like, how does the culture work? I know you like talking about it and figuring out like, so do you have some typical ways you go about like learning about some specifics of the culture of how people, you know, like the they do business, what's the typical like habits, traditions, some interesting things, because I think there are some, when you travel, there are some of those obvious things, right? Like that you can read on internet, but there are also some like surprises that only you discover once you kind of dig in and you live there for a while or you travel there for a while and you're like, oh, this is super interesting. It's like totally something I never knew about and no one told me about. So do you have like some specific process or things you do, or maybe some, I don't know, that's just like secret
I did learn, if I was going to a land where I had never been to before, then I would take the time to learn a little bit about it. Here's a classic example. I don't know if people have made this mistake before. Go to Thailand. Thailand's a great place, by the way. We're sort of trying to live there for a few months of the year. But when you go to Thailand, don't talk about the royal family. You know, don't say anything bad about the royal family. Just don't mention it, and don't touch someone's head or point with your feet. It's rude, and you know, it's the basics. But when I do my speaking on the cruise ships, apart from talking about the destinations that the cruise ships may or may not be going to, whether it's that actual cruise or one in the future, when I go into this, I know that's what I'm going to be talking about. So I learn a little bit about the history and geography of a place as well. All right. So just last year, beginning 2019, on a cruise ship that stopped at St. Petersburg, Russia. And apart from that, that's a great city, by the way. If you haven't got a chance to go there, I don't know. It's
never been
a neighborhood. And sort of. So I decided to look at the history, and the history is sort of tumultuous for what that city's been through, and it's very, very interesting. And so I learned a little bit about that so I could talk about it during a presentation. And on top of that, I talked about my experience going there because I previously spent a night or two there and what I got up to, things to see, the unbelievable buildings that are there. So, you know, that sort of collectively made up about a 45-minute presentation. And that's basically the way it worked. I'm interested in, it's like birth by fire. You go to a place, you learn about it by just being there, but then I'm more inclined to, I want to know more about this place. So I'll learn a little bit about history, which I'll read from Wikipedia or something like that, or a bit about the geography. So, you know, there's always stuff to learn about foreign land. I'm still learning stuff about America and even the United Kingdom, believe it or not. So there's always something to learn, you know.
Makes sense. And outside of like the knowledge about the country, when you are in the country itself, like what's your favorite way to like get to know the culture? For example, for me, I can tell you, so maybe you understand the question. For me, I figure out that, okay, it's great to like go to this like, you know, cool tourist places and, you know, visit the castle, visit this. But like one of my favorite ways is quite simple. Just like go to the, you know, like in the night, go to the main city, go to like the popular bars, figure out like how people dance, how people, you know, party, how people eat. Like this is, for example, for me, what makes me tick and where I found the most like nuggets of like, oh, this is how people do this. Oh, this is interesting. I didn't know about that. So do you have something like that for yourself?
What you're saying is exactly right. I'd do the same thing. I'm in a place for just a small amount of time, relatively speaking. So I want to make the most of it. I don't want to stay in a hotel room. So if I have to work, well, I work. I can learn, obviously, about the business culture, which is sort of important. And then going out at night, just going to the bars, the pubs, bars, restaurants. Pub, yeah. And even, I'm a bit older now. I'm a bit older than you, of course. But, you know, when I used to, all right, let's take myself to a nightclub here or see how the people get on there. And it's all part of the big picture, isn't it? You learn a bit about the people as well, so it's all enjoyable. It's some places where the culture is sort of a little bit different and all the doors close at 10 o'clock in the evening and whatever. But it's all right. Sometimes the trips are good, sometimes they're not so good, if you know what I mean. So
Yeah, exactly. Like
it's all part of a learning experience.
Yeah, like traveling, you know, there's, I think you have this saying, and I think it's perfect. Like, you know, there's the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? When you go to like just, you know, a resort and you stay there at the beach for a week, you don't see that. But when you like travel like you do, and for example, like I do, then you also see a lot of the ugly. And that also has a certain beauty to it, right? Like it's maybe not like beauty, but it's like it's interesting also to see that part, like the part that the people don't talk about or the part that you don't see on the travel magazines.
Yeah, I don't know if you know I write travel books as well, but it's been in the past business travel, but it's now more adventure travel. But at the back of the book, I always put like the chapter called The Good, Bad, and the Ugly. So it's my candid opinions about stuff, like the best countries I've been to, the not so good countries, the worst city, the most in disrepair and all that. So I list my favorites and the not so favorites, if you wish. And they're very candid opinions, but that's the way I feel. I don't mind talking about it, but you know, the countries that have the wildest places on the planet, the quietest places on the planet, you know, things like that.
Yeah, I saw that. I was reading. So maybe you can, I have two questions there and you can choose which one you prefer. So one, it's either what's your craziest, like, or most adventurous or most memorable travel story, or another is like, why Belize City is your most disliked city in the world, according at least to your site.
You remember that? Oh, no. Now, there's some really nice areas in Belize, actually, but
I know about Belize.
I had to go and work in Belize City, and it was during their Independence Day from the Brits, because it used to be called British Honduras. So anyway, it was in disrepair. That city was in just rubble everywhere. Did I feel safe? Well, not entirely. But the guys I was meeting with said, "Hey, Malcolm, just down." I walk out on the streets alone there. And they have a port there for cruise ships to come into. But what happens is the cruise ships tendered offshore, and they bring them in on a small boat, but they keep the passengers in a little area there. They don't let them out into the main city. That's what it was when I went there. What was the year?
I was like roughly.
It was probably 25 years ago, maybe.
Oh, wow. That must have been even crazier than
but
that.
I remember it, you know, it wasn't the most picturesque of cities. However, it does have its good spot. That's why I like it. And I mean, take that with a grain of salt, you know. So, yeah.
No, I was just curious. I traveled through Belize, and it's one of those most love-hate relationship places I've ever been on the planet. It's just, I don't know. I it's hard to describe this place. So I was curious, you know, like why you chose Belize City. I was thinking like of this reason, but I thought maybe there is some other experience, like someone kidnapped you or something.
No, I've actually been concerned about that before, obviously. But you know, especially taxi drivers, beware of taxi drivers. But anyway, the people I work with were quite nice, but it just. The environment. The hotel was in sort of a decent area, but I didn't see anything like, God, this place looks great. I want to go out for the evening and whatever. No, I stayed sort of in the hotel. But I mean, it may have changed. That was just my experience, and I may be wrong overall. And you know, locals might say, I tell you what, Teasdale, you just didn't see enough of our city. You didn't go to the nice. I don't know, but that's just my personal opinion.
No, it's good. Personal opinions, it's all about. So maybe that more interesting is going to be like, what's do you have like the most memorable adventure of your life? And if so, like what is it? Like, I would be curious. Like, I think people who do what we do, like they usually have like a couple that are just like instantly.
Yeah, mine's not. It depends which category you put this in as being memorable. Memorable could mean it's like. What does that really mean? The wildest place I've been to on the planet for nightlife is Pattaya in Thailand, right? And if you've been there.
Pattaya, it's the travel night place, yeah? Nightclubs and stuff, yeah?
Well, yeah, it's out there, you know, just, it's what. And I went there, it sounded like a lame excuse to do some scuba diving. people listen to this and tell me, yeah, I'm sure you did get lost, you know. But I went, but I got a sinus infection, so I couldn't go diving. So I just walked around the city there, and it's wild. But as far as memorable stuff, I'm fortunate to have lots of memories. But the things that that stay with me, I trekked to Tiger's Nest Monastery in Bhutan. Mm. I trekked the Himalayas. I went scuba diving in Palau, Micronesia, which is probably one of the best dive sites in the world.
Oh, wow.
Dipping down in Borneo. Those were the ones that I really enjoyed. I enjoyed going to Tibet as well, Lhasa, Tibet. It's like stuck in the ages, you'd go there. It's steeped in religion. And
Tibet?
Lhasa, Tibet, yeah, and you go to Patala Palace there, but it's like they're behind the rest of the world by hundreds of years, but it's a very, very special place, yeah. And still people who think that Tibet's a country, well, it's not, it's an autonomous region of China, so but the Chinese let you know it's their property, by the way, but it's a special place. And going to watch the monks debate about life in general. Even just going to South America, I had great experiences in South America as well, and Africa, went to Victoria Falls and stuff. There's all bits and pieces I remember, and luckily I got pictures and videos, which I keep around. I've been to some scary places, which I probably wouldn't want to go to again, but you know, that's all part of the part of the experience. Yeah, you've probably been through that yourself. Like, you've been to a place and I'm not sure I want to go back there again.
Or, yeah. There's been a few. Although I think less. I think at least for me that the trip through Central America on a bicycle proved that. I think the way people talk about it is way more scary than it actually is. Like, that's how I do
probably,
it.
And that's a lot. Yeah. Incidentally, did you go on bicycle or motorbike?
Bicycle.
Oh wow, that's extraordinary. So yeah. Where did you go to? Like Costa Rica, Honduras, Belize, or?
We went with a friend, and we started in Mexico, Cancun, and we went. Well, he went with me until Costa Rica. So we went through Belize, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, and in San Jose he went back, and then I went on my own to Panama, Bocas del Toro, and then from Panama I found the boat to Colombia, because that was the goal, to go from Mexico to Colombia. And in Colombia I finished. 6 months.
How long did that take you?
6 months.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say that sounded like a... So what, did you just have a backpack, did you? Backpack and bicycle, that's it.
Yeah, like those bags you have, you know, you have at the end of your bicycle, like those panniers, you call them panniers, sometimes in English. Yeah, it was incredible. Like sleeping at the fire stations, police stations, and
is that right? Oh my god, that's fantastic. But you see, if I did that, I call it the Teasdale fact. If I did that, my bicycle would break in the middle of nowhere. That would probably happen.
That's possible. Yeah. But I don't want to talk about me. This is about you, this conversation. So I guess one thing before we go more into like the business side of things, because that's also I'm really interested. And I know you also have quite a lot of experience. And I think it's always very interesting, the people that come from like kind of different areas of life and they combine them. But before we get there, like one last question about traveling and that part of your life is, you know, from all those cultures and travels, are there some like traditions, habits of ways of life from different cultures that you incorporated into your life? Like, for example, I drink mate. Yeah, it's like from Argentina, everyone drinks it. It's like the way, and this is something I just took from them. I saw, I like it the way they do it, and I like it. Do you have some things like that from Asia, from, you know, wherever in the world that you, as a British person, you know, that was born and raised there, that you incorporated now into your like everyday life, and that's not like maybe typical of like
I drink their beer.
You drink what?
I drink their beer. You know, if I'm going to, like, I still like my English beer, and I drink a beer from Asia or Europe. But apart from that, if I picked up some, I don't know, I've always learned a snippet of information wherever I've gone. Has it changed my life differently and I act like they do? No, it has, in the fact I've got more of an appreciation of the way other people live in the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest thing I've got. So if people say something negative about a country, I said, well, why are you saying that? Now, one of the things that I've been talking about before, even on cruise ships, is I talk about world indexes. I've said to friends here in foreign, I said, so, what's the greatest country in the world? And they said, America. I said, okay, why? And they said, well, because it is. Or or because we have the greatest military. Oh, okay, does that mean it's the greatest? And boom, things start going to a halt. So my view is that, yeah, I like living here in the United States, but then many countries of the world are great, and they do some things they do better than we do here. Now, we should all learn from each other, which is important as far as I'm concerned, you know. So even though I learn a bit about my healthcare system in another country, I wish we could do it better here in the United States sometime. And I'll tell people why. But do I act like they do? No, because the environment I live in, it's a bit difficult, right? because I live in a house here and close to the beach, it's very difficult to change my life dramatically. So I adjust, but when I'm out over there, then I adjust again. Like, went to Thailand 1 year, I did some rice farming over there, right? I just wanted to mix with the locals and do some rice farming and play the musical instruments. I'm all for doing stuff like that. Can't do rice farming here, I'm afraid.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So yeah, no, my life sort of comes back to normal here, which then gives me the urge, I gotta get out of town because I want to experience something different. That's pretty much it. But so, anyway, you're drinking some of the, what is that, by the way, you're drinking there?
Yerba mate.
It's like the, you know, it's like a coffee/tea, but of that region, like Paraguay, Uruguay, Argentina, like almost like 90% of people drink it there. Like, it's just their version of coffee tea, just that they have more like tradition to it. You know, like they have the whole process of how you drink it, and I have this cup which is like gourd, and you have the thermos, so like you like pour it like many times, you know, and you usually share it in like a circle, so it's usually not like a lone thing, so that's like more like social thing. That's why I liked it.
Yeah, one of the other things that we've learned is that when we come back here, we like ethnic food, so we try and cook a lot of Indian food in our house, but we'll also cook Thai food and Chinese food as well. So that's what we do. We have an Indian meal once a week here, so that's something we like doing. Bring back old times.
Oh, cool. So what's that, would it make sense to ask you, like, what's the greatest country in your opinion? Or it's a stupid question, like, given that you said that it's like it's more nuanced, like some countries do this well, some can do this well.
It is, yeah. You know, it's like saying, what country would you consider living in? You know, I'm here right now. We've got family here, of course. So you can't say, well, the hell with you guys, we're going to live somewhere else. That's difficult. But if I had the best countries that I've been to, I like the United States. I like England, by the way, or United Kingdom. I love the English countryside.
Yeah, you like it?
Yeah, yeah. Beautiful. And I miss that. Thailand, Singapore, I like Australia as well. And South Africa, I loved. And those are probably the main countries. But, you know, coming up, you know, I've been to a few of the countries that not been. I enjoyed my time in Latvia, believe it or not. That was a lot of fun.
And, really? Why?
I don't know. I went there and people are passionate there. And I don't know. I had a good time there. I went in October. So it's a bit chilly, but anyway, or the Caribbean. You know, I like the Caribbean islands because it's so laid back, right?
Yeah, slow, yeah.
Slow, right? Yeah, island time. And fortunately, the cruise ships I'm contracted for, many of them go down there, so it's nice to go island hopping, do whatever I do, but we get off at the ports and stay as long as we want. So there's not one specific country that I'm thinking, I have to go and live there permanently. No, but just to stay there for maybe not 2 weeks, but maybe a longer period of time. Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah. Okay. And I've talked about it with the wife several times about doing that, but you know, who knows whether that will actually happen.
So maybe that's a timely question. What do you think is our, like, you know, like 2021, like what do you think is like the future of travel for, like, in your kind of ice?
Well, right now, I mean, you're in Poland. I don't know what it's like where you are, but here, this is a bit weird. I keep a spreadsheet on all the COVID counts daily. And, you know, the fact is that USA has 4.27% of the world's population, but we have about 30% of the new cases each day. It's quite worrying. And so could we have managed it better? Well, I think so, but you know, the vaccines, all I'm looking for is a vaccine right now. And then there'll be a qualifying process. And, you know, it could be 2 or 3 months before we're eligible for it. I don't know. But it's light at the end of the tunnel. That's the way I see it, right? So, you know, as soon as we get the vaccine and maybe other restrictions. It's something to think about, which will enable us to sort of go off and travel somewhere else, I guess. I don't know.
But you think people will go back to traveling like normally, or is it going to be like...
I think so. If it's deemed safe, absolutely. What I heard about the cruise lines is this cruise is booked up now for 2021 and 2022.
Right? Really?
Yeah. No, I'm not a big cruise guy, by the way. I just do whatever I do on the cruise ship. I'd never been on a cruise before I actually got asked to talk. But I've actually got a trip booked for April. We booked a flight over to Asia several months ago to travel there in April next year.
Mm.
I'm hoping that we'll be able to make it. If not, we just have to defer it to another time. So I think that's important for anyone who travels, that they got to have, or any part of life, actually, they've always got to have something to look forward to. And it keeps people going. I guess it's a positive attitude.
Mm. Mm, so I guess that's a perfect transition to my like transitioning question from travel to business. It's like you mentioned that the best degree you can have is degree on common sense. And I guess like related to that, my question would be like, what are some like common sense, what's the common sense that you developed from travel to and now applied and later applied it to business? And from business to travel, you know, like I think it's there is a lot of times like you can take from some different field of life to a new field of life, you know, and there are lessons learned that you apply and that make you successful sometimes more than other people because they don't have that experience. So I'm curious if you have like some if there are some lessons that come to your mind that you took from travel and applied to business, or you took from business that you applied to travel, either mindset or specific like how to advise or, you know, things that helped you in either business or travel.
Our cheap ass sponsor is this generic can of yerba mate, carefully made in a factory on the wrong end of Warsaw. Remember, if you dread going pate, make sure you swig some yerba mate.
I don't think it was picked up in business or travel and moved to the other area. It's just there. And I probably was able to realize this when we started a business, because we had to start it with limited funds, but we couldn't do it ourselves. So we had to bring on staff to do it, qualified staff. And we weren't in a position to sort of, well, let's just wait and see. You know, it's either going to work or it's not. And we were fortunate to have a lot of good employees. We got about 145 in the end. But, you know, everyone that we employed was on an incentive plan, and they're up for review every 6 months.
Mm.
We probably class as paying people well, but we expected them to perform. But we were all one big family, and most people did. And we even gave them a piece of the company if they wanted it. But it was the right thing to do in our mind to keep them productive, interested, and make the company successful. Had to have good people on board. And it was easy to learn when we tried to do business in a country, or try to sell a product to another company for selling. It was easy for us to figure out, well, this is not going to work out. It's no good even trying any further. So we just back away and move on with something else at that time. And so you learn that through the days, wasting time. Time is precious, right? So if you feel something that, I think this is going to be sort of a waste of time and money. Okay, that's enough. And it probably is. If you feel like that, it probably is. So go on, think of a new idea. I'm not saying we did things right all the time, but you learn from your mistakes and you move on. As you learn from your mistakes, you become more, I don't say cynical, but you become more astute to that. This ain't going to work. That is, we need to go here or whatever. So it's a learning process. It's like going to a foreign country, you know. Now, I don't think I want to go to North Korea right now. You know, you just don't think about stuff like that because it's a common sense thing to do. So that's it. Now, thought about going to Everest Base Camp. Then I saw pictures on the internet of how everyone's queuing up for Everest Base Camp and people are dying there on the side of the mountain, and you wonder why, because it's overcrowded. That's not for me. I'm not going to do that. So there's all these things that you just learn along the way that makes you more, I should say, have this degree in common sense that you know what to do and know what not to do.
Mm-mm, so but that's what you mean.
It just happened, comrade. So I just don't know in me.
Okay. So that's what you mean by like the degree on common sense, that like kind of.
Don't waste time and money. And you know, if it seems like the right thing to do, then just do it. You could be wrong, but you learn along the way. And that was, it's a birth by fire thing. If many of us were employed by a company, they just go to work each day, do the things they have to do. The company expects things from you. But when I had the company, and then you've got employees working for you who are dependent on you making it successful because we're paying, and when they take out mortgages and stuff, you have to be sort of responsible for that. So they're depending on you to make it successful or to make the right decisions of, well, let's try and sell our product into South America. And yes, I know we have to translate the product into Spanish and Portuguese for Brazil. So these things we know going in, so we can actually budget accordingly to make a mark in that country. So again, that's why I call it common sense. It just happens over time, I think, but because of the mistakes we made, not serious ones, but we made mistakes and we learned from them. So,
okay.
That's my reasoning. Sounds weird, but it's happened.
No, it makes sense. So besides, to follow up with that, so besides experience and learning from mistakes, what other ways, like what other either books, mentors, or some other sources either influenced you in your business kind of career and made it work for you in the end? Alternatively different question, like what would be your advice to people who are either, starting out with their business, or they are now like slowly growing it and they want to kind of get better as like founders and entrepreneurs? I guess these are like similar questions, either like what were the most influential sources for you besides experience and learning from mistakes, or what's the advice for, from you to other people on kind of this like early stage business journey?
I had some mentors along the way, and one of them is still alive today. He was my boss at one time, fellow Brit, and he was always good and encouraging me along the way. When we first started the business, my thought was, if we don't do it now, we never will. And we were at that age around about early 30s maybe. And we thought, we've got to do this now, but we have an opportunity. And we thought about it. And, we made that decision to move forward. And we actually took a voluntary layoff took a voluntary layoff from our existing company. So, well, we got funds right there. Let's use it. It's a golden opportunity, right? If we don't do it now, we never will. And that's how we started off. But we did our research because we thought at the time we could develop a product better than our existing company could. And we know who we can sell to. All right. Now, that was okay. And it started off, and people were looking at we had supporting technologies, by the way, from Microsoft, but we were able to approach companies around the US and say, this is what we've got, and this is why it's better than what you've seen before. So we had a story to tell. But then it came to the point where, well, have we got a product that would fit in the international market? And we did. And this is where, maybe a lot of companies don't even think about this, but we ventured into the international market. We did our research and found out companies overseas that were interested in selling our product. And by the way, we could translate our software, and bang. And that brought a lot of interest. We didn't have to put a staff over there in these countries, but we had a company that said, yeah, we could sell your product on top of what we do today. And that's extra revenue for them, they said. So, add on. we were happy, they were happy, their customers were happy. And the other thing was, just because the economy may not be good at any, in any country at one time, it may not be bad elsewhere. So yeah, during the 2007, 2008 time, the economy went through a rough time, but it wasn't that bad elsewhere, right? But we had a story to tell even through the bad economic times, where we said, yeah, let me tell you why you cannot afford not to buy this product. And so that helped as well. Anyway, I digress, but that's basically, you know, the story of what we did. Yeah, so we had mentors along the way, encouragement. But again, we just saw opportunities and we just found ways to make it happen in the end. And yeah, we were fortunate, but we had a lot of people who worked hard to get us there. All good.
Mm. So it seems like the common theme there would be something I like to call a calculated risk. It's like you weren't afraid to take it, but it wasn't also like this dumb risk. Like, and maybe for some people outside, it could look like it the same way, for example, going to, I don't know, Central America on a bicycle. But you know, there was a thought behind it that, okay, in the worst case scenario, this could happen and it's not going to be so bad. And for you, it seems like it was similar. Like when you started it, you had like this, what do you call, layoff or no layoff? What was it called?
Yeah, we had layoff because some people didn't fit in. So we had to replace them, but you identify that early. So we cut our costs. But yeah, that's a question. What's the worst thing that can happen? And well, then you look at that. But even with travel, maybe things aren't as bad. Like I mentioned to you earlier about when I went to St. Petersburg, if I looked on the U.S. government website under the countries and mentioned about people going to St. Petersburg, it said there was a spat going on at the time between the USA and Russia, and they just closed the consulate in St. Petersburg. And I looked on the USA government website, they basically said, don't go there. And they've said that about a few places, but that element of fear. So I checked on the Canadian government website and the UK website, and it was not much going on here. In fact, 150,000 Brits go to St. Petersburg every year. Can't all be that bad. So you have to read between the lines, get opinions from elsewhere. So I just went, and there's no problem at all, you know. But it's that you got to be careful. Best to get, if you don't like something you hear, maybe you should just go and look at a bit more and figure out why. But anyway, we made it through, and that's the main thing.
Mm-hmm. And as far as like sources of wisdom, so like, do you have some like favorite business books and stuff like that, or not so much? Like you mostly learned from like experience and mentors, not so much.
I don't have this one here. I don't know if you can see that. Travel Diaries of an Atypical Businessman.
Oh, okay.
It's an unfiltered edition. That's a reason for that. But that was the first book I read, but it was all about business travel. So there's some about how to conduct business in foreign cultures in there, but it was the experiences of business travel. There are a lot of self-help books around said, hey, we'll tell you how to sell your product this way, that way, and make a bazillion dollars. And I don't read stuff like that. Because a lot of it is, probably not truthful. So I wrote a book about just business travel. There's quite a bit there to Central America and South America as well, about, what to expect. But the very first time I went to Buenos Aires, Argentina, as a Brit, going to Buenos Aires, right? Remember the Falklands War soccer? And of course, England and Argentina were big rivals. So I was thinking, are these guys going to bring up these subjects when I'm down there? And the hand of God goal. You know about that. I do. Yeah. But anyway, the meetings went very, very well. And those guys were really friendly. And it was just fine. But you just got to be cognizant of that. But it was all about those experiences. And if you're going on business meeting, what they're going to feed you, even, and preparation.
So, So can you talk about a little bit about that? Because that was actually one of the questions I had, like what you mentioned about, for example, and I actually knew this from a friend too in Asia. There is this thing that you have to do like face-to-face meetings, like no one does business like over the phone. So I'm curious, like what, how do you usually like go about like learning about the business kind of manners? Business manners and or maybe like what's you know, tell a little bit about your like the story with Asia, like how did you find this out, that you know, the face-to-face meetings, and how does it look there?
I would say, well, the most important thing is in face-to-face meetings is learn quite a bit about the company you're visiting. So you go in there, don't expect you just sell and said, oh, I hear you're ready to buy our products and send us a purchase order. No, you go in and show interest in the land, the country you're in, have respect for the country, but also have an interest in the company that you're meeting with, so you know exactly what they do and ask them questions about it. So it shows that interest. It's a two-way thing. Typical Asian culture, this affects many people in the world, is no one will do business with you if they haven't got a personal relationship with you, sort of. Relatively speaking, they've got to be, he's a friendly sort of guy. But if they don't like you, then we don't need to do this, out of here. So I think that's important. So obviously worth doing homework there. And China was a little bit different. Yeah, that was a bit challenging because I'd just been in a meeting and there was a company we were trying to do business with, and there were 10 gentlemen sitting at a bench, and there was a language problem. And they said, yeah, Mr. Teasdale, couldn't you justify how we should ever do business with your company? Just like that. And very straight. And thought, oh, okay. So I tried. And that was challenging, right? But they looked at each other and I don't, either they didn't understand or no, that one didn't work out. But you know, it's generally speaking, it does, because if you take the time to listen to how they work and have respect for them, and you're probably going to be okay. And they will respect the fact that you travel all that way to see them, right? You had an interest in what they do. And of course, at the end of the day, they want to make money. So you've got to have a story and tell, well, this is why I think you can make money. And chances are, you know, if they can add products to their portfolio and make money from it, it's a good thing.
So I guess the takeaway here would be that, it's important that you're actually, you know, you learn about their business and how you can help them the business wise. But if you do it overseas, that also very important aspect is that you understand how business is done in that culture and you respect that. Like you don't try to force your way of doing business, but you're like, okay, in Vietnam or whatever, China, this is how you guys do business. Like you first have to meet face to face, then you have to meet your family. We have to like gather, like I have to meet your family, and then finally maybe we can do business, right?
It is. I mean, the communications now are a lot better than they were 20 odd years ago. So it's more open to remote communication. Based on what's happened recently, people are going to be more open to that, doing business remotely. But back then, the business culture was such that I basically had to do what I did to make a concerted effort, because you can waste time trying to do stuff over the phone and swap emails and stuff like that. But if you want, they said, I'd like to come over and see you. Well, that's a whole different thing. Then they make prep for you and they get serious about it. So that's good. Yeah. Well worth it. That's one thing that I learned from, especially in some countries, is the importance of meeting face to face. Yeah.
Are there some other like interesting ways of doing business, like besides the Asian way of only like meeting face to face? Are there some other places in the world where like doing business is slightly different than States or like Britain?
I think they're all different to a certain extent. The Caribbean. And if you want to go to the I went down to the Cayman Islands and to help them install one of our products. It's for the one of the main communications company there. And I called them up, and the products have been shipped to them, whatever. It's not, it's software basically. But they said, yeah, Malcolm, just come on down. We're ready for you, man. So I went down there to the Cayman Islands. I met with them and I said, hey, how you doing? And I said, well, did everything here that we need? He said, I think so. It's next door. Okay, walked in. And this is where the equipment was going to go. I was totally unprepared. There wasn't even electricity running there. And that's the way, right? It's just, oh, well, how are we going to hook this stuff up? He said, oh, we'll get one of our guys on it. Okay. And I landed up helping them to put in the electrical work and finish the room off, you know, decorating it. So we get the equipment in there and get it installed. Wasn't a bad thing because I got to spend an extra day, a couple of days in the Cayman Islands. But it's that laid back attitude, right? But it is, yeah. That's there, you know? And you just have to go back. You just have to laugh at it, you know? It's all right, you know?
Yeah. It's it brings back memories, like the whole Caribbean way. It's just...
but you know what I mean, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I know very much what you mean, like the ultra slow. And I think, you know, coming back to Belize, we talked about, I think this is by far the slowest place I've ever been. It's like, I haven't been all those like Caribbean islands, so it's possible it's very similar, but like just like you really have to, you know, adapt well to not get like pissed off there. Like that's it.
Yeah. You learn quickly, but it was all right. It was all right. Actually, someone had pre-warned me about that because they said, just be careful, Leonard. It could be a bit, the island time. Island time, okay. Yeah, all right, we'll see. And that's exactly what happened, you know. But they were cool. And then they said, okay, Malcolm, yeah, we got it. We'll go out for lunch. Okay, well, that's 2 hours. So it'll take me to some sort of small cafe down a dirt road and have some island food there. But it's all right. And then you just socialize with them. And all of a sudden you become one of them, like sort of laid back. And that's the way it is. It's just nothing wrong with it, really. Mm. Otherwise it could be rushed or, you know, whatever, but that's all right. Yeah. Actually, the key word that comes in here is patience. You've got to have patience and tolerance. So it's well worth it if you can.
Mm, so it seems like you had like quite an enormous advantage when doing business abroad with your experience traveling, that you kind of found this synergy of like, oh, I have this, you know, great experience, and then I have this business, and then now I can finally, you know, like use this to my advantage, because not many people, you know, I think would be able to handle it that well. Like, I think you were able to do it in so many places because you traveled to all these places. So then you are not like this fresh person who is like first time leaving States to you know, like Caribbean islands trying to do business. You are a guy who's like, you know, went to Asia here, crazy country here, crazy country here. And suddenly, you know, it's like, okay, it's new, but you are used to new.
Yeah, exactly. You know, even the little things like food, like you meet a company for the first time, and there'll always be lunchtime. I gave you two instances here. This was in, it was Beijing, but we went in and met this company. He said, yeah, we're just going to go for lunch and a decent restaurant. And they said, well, you want? I said, just order for me. So my plate for lunch was just a lot of chicken feet. And I could have said, I just can't eat this stuff. You know, come on, they're going to need hot sauce. Anyway, you stumbled through it. But here's a classic example. I love Mexico, by the way, but it was in Mexico City. They have a great work ethic there. And we started at 9 o'clock. I was with a business partner of ours, and it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 2-3 o'clock. And he said, I'm going to take you to one of my favorite restaurants down a side street. And we ordered some food. And he said, do you want to try one of the best tequilas that we have here? I said, well, okay. I looked at my watch. Said, oh, okay. So we had one. I said, good, isn't it? Let's do another. We have four tequilas. I'm feeling no pain here. And it's about 5 o'clock. I said, I'll be looking forward to get back to the hotel here. And he said to me, Malcolm, we've got a couple of more sales meetings to go to right now. My jaw dropped to the floor. I said, you've got to be kidding me. Nah. So we went to a couple more sales meetings. I got a hand over my mouth, you know, because anyway, we got through them and no harm was done, basically. But hey, that's lesson learned there as well. You know, late lunches.
that's good. That's good.
That was funny.
Oh, nice. That's good memories. So I guess the last thing with business, you know, I kind of a small topic that I know you have a lot of expertise on, and I like your take on it. I would love to hear a little more detail on that. Is hiring the right people?
Yeah.
Maybe you could say, you know, why is it important first? Like, why is it so important to hire, you know, the right people from the start? And also, how do you go about hiring the right people? You know, because at the beginning, when you start, it doesn't seem like such a big deal. Like, oh, maybe I will hire like this freelancer here, yeah. This guy here. Oh, this guy knows, you know, like has the skill. It doesn't matter his character. It doesn't matter his culture fit. So I would love to hear your take on it, because I know you have a strong opinion on that.
Now, I was in the United States at the time. My partner, business partner, was in Ottawa, Canada. So we had some recruiting to do. So we were after, in Canada, software engineers who were qualified. And so we approached Ottawa University to look at the graduates coming out of university who had the fire in their belly. They wanted to get a good job. They wanted to, and that's what they went to obviously university for. So they really had enthusiasm to join a company, a growing company, right? And that was important. And we picked up some, because we had worked with people we trusted in the past. We asked if they would join us as well. Some of them did, some of them didn't. But trust is a big thing. Qualifications are a big thing. And obviously enthusiasm is huge, because we want them to be part of a team. You know, and anyone who came on board, we put them on a 30-day, not trial, but, you know, we said, come on for 30 days. If we like you, you know, you're on full time. Me in the US, I was more interested in the sales. I'm an engineer turned sales guy. So I was more interested in bringing on qualified people to do that. So I had some connections and we brought them on board. I did bring a guy out of university there, University of Wisconsin, because he was keen to get into the workplace. You got to trust them. But sometimes when you interview, and I wasn't good at this, but sometimes when you interview a person, you've got to see their enthusiasm. Now,
how do you do it?
And a guy I met, he does recruiting for major companies. And he said he was had some interviews one day, and the weather was terrible outside. And I think he was in Dallas, Texas. And a lot of his interviews were canceled. But one lady turned up, and it was 20. She came in soaking wet in her interview and looked a mess. And he said, well, you made it here, so why do you want this job? He said, I can do this job. I want this job. I'll do anything. And that enthusiasm stayed with him, because she took the time. She made it to this job interview in this bad condition because the weather was so bad outside. So that shows some enthusiasm there, and which is very important. But as I said, 30-day trial, if you wish. And then to keep them there, obviously, incentives and also reviews every 6 months to make sure things are ticking along. But there's resources to get people on board, academically qualified, but also experience as well. But the main thing is they've got to have the personality, friendly, outgoing, if you wish, but enthusiasm are the keys as far as I'm concerned. You can bring someone in from university that's got a good degree or in computer science, but if their personality doesn't fit within your company, it's just not going to work out at all.
So
There's all these things.
So what are your favorite, like, if you have, what are your like favorite questions to like ask to figure out if someone has that fire in their belly or enthusiasm? Do you have some like favorite, like, you know, secret sauce questions?
Well, I was, one of the questions I was asked, I said, so what do you like about our company that you applied for a job? So that would actually open up the door and say, well, they've done research on our company, right? That would be a good, the question is, why would you like to work for us? We're a new company. You could go and work for a large company down the street, but we're growing. We've only got a handful of people right now. Why would you take a chance working for us? Right? So, you know, things like that. And, you know, a lot of these people come for interviews. They've been at college, university. So they've been mentored into the way they go through these interviews. But you can, you know, when they come on board for an interview, they just, you can just read through that. You can see their enthusiasm. But if they said, well, I think I'll do a good job here and, you know, when can I start? You know, that's not going to work, right? And then because we were offering, our intention was to offer pieces of the company to these employees was important also if we were successful. So anyway, direct questions like that, and you look at their eyes and... if they show an interest, you're a good thing. But, you know, I can't, it's been so long, Conrad, since I did an interview, I can't remember, but I think asking the pointed questions and are important. So
so you need basically...
You're paying their salary, right? You got to get it right. And you want to get it right. You don't want, time is valuable. You don't, oh, God, I bored. And we made a mistake. Yeah, we did employ some people that, it didn't work out, so we sent a replacement. In Canada, though, it's a different. If you want to employ someone, same in the UK, and you have to lay them off, you have to pay salary for several weeks afterwards. You can't just, you're out of here. In the, it's different, and you have to pay by government rules as well. So anyway, learning process. It's all a learning process, right?
So. So you would choose like the culture, personality, over skills every day of the week, seems like.
I wouldn't say they got to have the two. They got to have the skills and probably the academic qualifications, but they've got to have the personality as well. Even though the people we brought on board, we sent them for training, the technical staff, because we had to teach them about new Microsoft technologies to enhance what they already learn at college, which was computer science degree or whatever, or electrical engineering. So we wanted to do that. But if they were academically suitable, they may not be personally suitable, you know? So that's sort of important. So those things are, it's a combination of them, really.
Mm-hmm. What about the most common dilemma, which I think is a lot of times in many people's kind of, or founders' paths, is like you have these two people, right? Like you have one person that's like hyper skilled, but it feels like they are, you know, there's things off with them. Like for example, they're sometimes late, or they have on their job and stuff. And but they're really, really good at what they do. And then you have this person who is maybe like just kind of maybe not, doesn't know anything, but it's kind of more beginner level. But seems like they have that, you know, enthusiasm and they really want to work for your company. So like, what would be your choice there, and how would you think about it? And
why? Those are probably too extreme. However, the guy you mentioned first, the highly qualified people who's late for work, and if he keeps doing that, then that's not the person to have, because he doesn't want to be there, or how productive can he be, right? Mm-hmm. And that enthusiasm may go away. He could be doing a part-time job somewhere, but it's not going to work ultimately. If the guy who comes on board, he's not going to be a duffer to start with anyway, because he's not going to be a kid that's not qualified. Or there's going to be some qualifications there.
Mm-hmm.
The reason being, he got invited to an interview in the first place, and that's the human resources department to actually get him in here. But the fact is, if he or she comes in and says, yeah, I'll be a good guy. I'm going to be a good person for you. I got the fire in my belly. This is what I really want to do. I love the small company environment. My brother works for Walmart, you know, whatever. But you know. Now, when we first started out, it was just me and my partner and a couple of other staff we brought in from our old company doing the interviews. So we were doing the best we can. But as we grew, we had a human resources department who filtered out a lot of this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And they were professionally qualified. Said, yeah, guys, this is the right person. Let me tell you why. And so we got help along the way. But starting out, you know, it was just kind of doing, having our best guesstimate, if you wish. But it, you know, we lost a few, we gained a few. It's never going to be perfect or, you know, out of the gate. Mistakes will be made. We expected that. But generally speaking, you just get over it and move on, you know.
That's I think like also a common theme like I heard from you, and I think that's probably something to that for people to take away on like kind of your outlook is that it's always like, you know, I expect things to go wrong and you know, I prepare the best I can, but if they happen, I just, you know, try to figure out solutions, not focus on the problem itself or the mistake and move forward and just, you know, like expect them to come again, because that's what happens when you try to grow, learn and move forward, right?
Yeah. Actually, one of the very first people I employed in the US, I needed a finance person. Because I was going to be on the road a lot, I needed a finance person to be there at the beginning. And I interviewed a few people. But the girl who came in to see me, she was from Indonesia. And she just graduated from University of Wisconsin. She got two master's degrees, taxation and finance. And her and her husband were, and he was lovely guy, actually. And they both wanted to actually stay in the United States, but wanted help getting a work permit and a green card. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I've been through this process. I might be able to help. So I went through the process of enabling that to make it happen. And she came on board and she was with us from day one to the day, pretty much to the end. So she was invaluable asset to the company. Yeah, I saw that initially. She was friendly, but she was qualified as well. And I thought I'd make the effort to make it happen by getting her a work permit. So, which was basically easy. Because a lot of companies would say, you know, work permit, oh, you know, I can't be bothered with that. But I'd actually been through that process before. So I knew. Now that's just a little story there.
No, but I guess it shows that it's a very like it was a great way for you to kind of earn loyalty, right? Like because you did something you didn't have to do, so then that person felt like, you know, they kind of owe you.
Yeah, she could have felt like that, but she was actually very good. And then if she felt like an employee was slacking, then she'd come up and tell me that because I was out of town. I said, Malcolm, so-and-so here, while you're away, let me tell you that, you know, that type of thing. I know it's being a snitch, but she was very good at that. But she was very efficient at what she did, you know, which I could see that from the beginning. So. But it wasn't all like that because, again, you know, everyone makes mistakes along the way. You bring in employees and it doesn't work out. So you have to say, well, sorry, it's not working out, you know, and for a company to say they've never had a problem with their employer, probably totally incorrect. Everyone does, you know, it happens. You just learn to deal with it. You learn to overcome at the end of the day. So.
So don't be afraid to let people go, you're saying, too.
No.
Okay.
Your business is most important, right? At the end of the day, this person will be able to find another job somewhere. So don't be afraid of it.
No. Mm-hmm. So last small question there, because I think this is one of the hardest things to figure out, and I think you figured it out and you have your take on it, is the incentives part in business. Because I think you figured out by giving people shares, but I think in general, I read about it somewhere, and I figured also when I was, you know, trying to build my business a little bit, is that like incentives are key. Like if you nail incentives the right way so that they work, like the people are incentivized to do the right thing for them and at the same time for the company and for your growth, then you just, you know, all things go forward. But the hard part is a lot of times figuring out like how can you design the incentives that they, you know, kind of all come together. So do you have some advice there? I know one is, for example, you used to give like shares to your employees, like your shares in your company.
Well, not necessarily give them, but gave them the option to buy them. Mm-hmm. So we deduct money from the salary, so they'd buy into the company. It shows their dedication, their enthusiasm, and their interest in staying with the company, okay? And once these people had a piece of the action, so to speak, we were fortunate to be able to, like every year, we look at our profit margin and then give bonuses based on the number of shares they had. And we were fortunate to be able to do that. However, these people had an interest in the company doing well. If they saw a fellow employee not pulling his or her weight, they would tend to let us know, you know, because they it's their interest as well, right? And especially in software development, because stuff has to get developed by a certain time and go through a process called quality assurance. If stuff like this is not done on time, when you announce the product's coming out at such and such a day, things sort of can go bad. So we had to, timing is everything. So if things, we had particular supervisors and departments, but if supervisors say that might have had a share of the company, that they said, you know, we got so-and-so down here, you know, they're coming in late and they're not producing, it's not working out, then we'll do something about it. So that's important as well. But what we also did as a company, we had company get-togethers a few times a year, like Christmas parties, July the 4th parties, and there was something else as well, Canada Independence Day and US Independence Day parties, where the company would pay for everything, and everyone get together, especially Christmas time, everyone to get together. And then whoever were in our office remotely, we'd fly them in and we'd all get together and have a big shindig, and we'd pick up the tab for food and drink. And that was a big thing. That was actually very important, actually, because it's like a reward for them. You know, everyone could chill out and chat to people they hadn't seen for a long time. So that was a good thing. So,
and if you can't, let's say, give shares, what other ways do you think you can like structure incentives in company to make sure it's
our the other one for engineering, we would want to send them to learn about a new technology, keep up with technology. So training could be continuous because it changes over time, because we leveraged Microsoft technologies and other telecommunications technologies, which required additional training. So we would send them to night class or online classes, whichever were available back then, and we would pay for that. All right. So, and there's some caveats there. So, well, if we train you and you leave inside 6 months or a year, then you're going to have to pay us back for the training we just gave you. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's normal. But based on the fact that we were picking up the tab for their training was good. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it. Otherwise, they got further educated in the process. So there's an incentive as well.
Mm. Okay.
But the fact of just growing the company and was substantial, because at the end of the day, we were able to pay at the end of the year bonuses, because we were making money, and based on their shareholdings, some of them would do quite well from it. So that was good. We had a good track record, and we got a few industry awards for technology. And so we became a company that a lot of people wanted to work for. So that was fortunate. And there was an award we got for, I can't remember what it was in Canada, where happiest places to work or something like that. I don't know what it was.
Oh, really?
Many, many years ago, yeah. Because of the environment that we created, our office space was nice. We were like one big team. So it worked out quite well. And yep. Keep it a friendly place, and everyone there was not our CEO up in Canada always had his door open, right? Never had it closed, but he was always approachable, which is a great thing. Everyone in the company was approachable. We weren't above anyone. So if someone would come knocking on a door, he said, I got a personal question for you. I want to come in and talk about it. And that was important as well.
So it seems like that one of the big key to success, actually big part of it, was not just like the business side of things, but like the environment you guys created and the culture within and the hires. So more like the people aspect gave you maybe even more, like it was the bigger part of success than like the, you know, the technology or like business side of things, like profit margins and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, one of the keys here is that you don't think about is that you've got a person on board who's been on board for quite some time, that they've learned how we work, they've become educated about our products, and they decide to leave, right? And we assume that everyone in our company is valuable because we're a small company, but that person decides to leave. That puts a big hole in the company. We have to, it has to be filled, but we can't find anyone to fill it immediately. We have to bring someone up inside, in from the outside, and probably train them, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea is once we got valuable people on board, is not do anything to try and lose them.
Mm.
Company's biggest asset is their employees.
Mm.
We've been through that before, where a guy said, I think he was just starting his own thing, but he just said, come in, guys, I'm bailing out of here. I'm going to start my own thing. There's a big hole there, and we had to fill it the best we could. But there's a time frame to bring someone else up to speed of this person who left. Yes, that's another thing to look out for.
That's great. Great advice. Hope people are taking note. So I guess the last thing would be, this is a new one, and it's in theme with the quest for questions. Basically, the idea behind quest for questions is that there's, you know, more things we don't know than we do know. So the question for you, one of the last is what's your unanswered question, if you have one? Like, is there anything that you've had for on your mind for quite a long time, or maybe recently, that kind of lingers and you think about and you don't really have an answer to?
Yeah, how'd you do plumbing?
That's funny.
I haven't figured that out yet. I tried to delve into that the other day, and I tried to put a new thing outside. I'm giving up on this, calling a plumber. So I don't need to learn about that stuff.
That's good.
I don't know. I'm pretty content, to be honest with you. Is there more to see and do? Yeah. Do I want to do it? Yeah, because there will come that day where I won't be able to do it. So I wouldn't say there's something that I really have to do to be content, you know, fulfilling. Like, I don't want to be on my... Here's a thought. I don't want to be lying on my deathbed and they're getting ready to pull the plug and I have regrets about something. Mm. Right. So, and a lot of people relate to that. So that's my thought. I want to do everything I can in the time I've got and just sit back and, well, I'm sort of happy now. And there, you can take me. Unplug me. Go on. Do it. So I'm okay with that. I'm okay with life.
In my book, it feels like you are there, kind of. Like I think you've done, almost if not everything you wanted to do. You don't really have regrets, right? I mean, it feels
that's
like to me.
2020 again, so that's it.
Okay. Any last thoughts, or maybe tell people where they can find you online, and anything that maybe I haven't asked you and you wanted to share, then that would be there.
Yeah, if anyone wants to track me down, Malcolm Teasdale. Let me spell that, because many people spell my name incorrectly. MalcolmTeasdale. And you can Google me, but my website is malcolmjteasdale.com. And it's basically about travel. That's why I mentioned about all those opinions I had earlier on. It's on the website as well. And I've written about 5 books. about, it is five books on travel, business travel and adventure travel. You'll see descriptions of them on the website and the chapter names, which are quirky. The books are educational, quirky, risque, edgy, whatever you want to call them. And you can read stories about this and you'll probably ask the question of why on earth did he do that? And so it's also a page on the website about my presentation topics on cruise lines as well. I got videos and pictures up there from various places around the world. I'm also on LinkedIn, on Twitter, on Malcolm the Brit on Twitter, and on Facebook, it's Traveling Addict, I think. That's what I am. And I've got a podcast called, which I recently started. It's just called The Travel Addict. And I'm trying to gear up what happened next year, where I'll be able to have guests on myself, and you're more than welcome, by the way. But right now, I've just recorded some trip episodes on there, which are on my website, but they're also on the usual iTunes website, Stitcher and Spotify and all that. But that's a bit about me. That's it, malcolmjteasdale.com. That's my website, more about me on there and contact information. And
okay, I will link it in the description, so if someone didn't get it, then there's also gonna be there. Just last thought, like what made you get into the whole like book writing, like write five books? That's quite a lot. Like
it's my mother, because she even when I was living in the US, every time I went back to England or I used to stop over at their place, and they said, where are you off to now? And she said, what do you do for a living? And I tried to explain. She never understood it, you know. And she said to me one day, why don't you just write a book? And she was on me for some time. And I decided to do that. But unfortunately, after I completed the first book, she had passed away. She got Alzheimer's, but she passed away. But she was the one who sort of encouraged me to do it. And then I did the first one, but it's a great thing for anyone to do, because it's a little sense of achievement there. Mm. You write a book, you can self-publish it on Amazon, and it's actually quite a neat thing to do. You know, I know people who have done it, but just, you know, first book was about, I say, how many pages long? Yeah, about 200 pages long. And, you know, it's a good thing to do, because it's another way of tracking memories. Now, here's another thought here. Growing up, I've got photographs of my parents growing up. They're all black and white pictures. And I've got a couple of videos. But one thing I don't have are words. Mm. They never documented anything. So in years to come, I've got books here which tell a lot about myself, or you can tell whatever you want. But family or my son, niece and nephew will be able to read these books in years to come, or pass down to their family, and someone saying, look what granddad did, he's an absolute nutcase. You know, I don't know, but it's there, documented, give you a chance to remember stuff. And even if you write something today, in 20 years time, you may read it again and say, oh, I did that. You would have forgotten about it probably, but you can read your own book and say, yeah, I did this. If you write about yourself, that is. But whether it's fiction or nonfiction, it's a good thing to do.
Mm, yeah, books are timeless. Yeah, it seems like you don't really care about the sales, right? Like about like, oh, how many I want, you know?
No, just for
yourself.
I give them away on cruise ships to the audience, and I've done zero marketing. Yeah, I do sell them, but I'm not going to do anything on huge. But that's, if you want to market them, you can. But yeah. I don't. So, you know, they're there. I give them away and want to mail one over to you as well.
Mm, yeah, that would be
wonderful. Send me a mailing address. I'll get one in the mail to you.
Great, great, great. How old are you, by the way, Malcolm?
What a question.
No, because I don't know if you...
I'm not going to ask you how old I look. I tell you why, because look at my hair. I haven't had my hair cut since February. I'm not going to a hairdresser's. I look like a hippie. No, I'm 65.
Oh, 65. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I'm 65.
Okay.
I'm not going to ask you how old you are either, but I'm just saying, yeah, I'm 65.
No, I was just curious. There was no like particular reason.
I'm going to settle down when I'm 95.
Oh, so it's still...
I'm going to settle down in life when I'm 95, yeah. That's, I've made that decision.
So a couple more years ahead.
Yeah, a couple more.
Listen, Malcolm, it was, thank you so much. Thank you so much for, you know, accepting my invitation and that we were able to connect and schedule this and, you know, almost have a 2-hour conversation right now. And, you know, I had a lot of fun doing it. Hope you too.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate that. Just good to talk to someone about travel and stuff, and especially from the other side of the pond there over in Europe. That's cool.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Quest for Questions podcast. If your immediate reaction after listening to this episode is either, fuck, that's some great advice, can't wait for more, where do I sign up? Or, man, I had the same idea in mind, but I assumed it's just me being weird. Thank you for sharing. Or, this bastard hurt my feelings, offended my delicate soul, and should be banned from the internet. Then it means we're on the right track, doing God's work. In that case, make sure to subscribe, review, or do whatever else is allowed by technology to support this show. If you want to suggest a quest or have a question worthy of a quest, head to ConradYerba.com. Go down the rabbit hole of truth each and every Sunday. Available on most podcasting platforms, YouTube, and Pirate Bay. Wink, wink. Let Yerba be with you.